From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, the San Francisco Board of Supervisors is voting today on whether or not to continue to study a controversial congestion pricing proposal for San Francisco. Under congestion pricing, drivers who are coming into the downtown area during peak hours would have to pay a toll. The revenue would go to public transportation. Advocates argue that it's necessary for dealing with ongoing greater traffic, while those opposed counter that it is not fair to commuters coming to San Francisco for work from outside the city. We'll take up the debate in the hour ahead after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. The Bay Area is the second most congested region in the nation, according to the Texas Transportation Institute, second only to Los Angeles. On a typical day, San Francisco's transportation system serves over 4 million trips on a range of travel modes. By 2030, that number is projected to increase to over 5 million. Automobile traffic accounts for 58% of daily citywide travel. But what if congestion could be reduced and more people could be induced to use public transportation if a toll were imposed for going into San Francisco during peak commute hours? Today, the San Francisco Board of Supervisors votes on whether or not to continue a study initiated in 2007 on congestion pricing of tolls for drivers entering San Francisco at peak drive times, a proposal that other areas outside of the city, such as those on the peninsula and in Marin, have serious objections to seeing move forward. We're going to take up the debate in this morning's opening forum hour. And joining us in studio is Jose Luis Moscovich, who is Executive Director of San Francisco County Transportation Authority. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Rob Black with us as well, Vice President of Public Policy for the San Francisco Chamber of Commerce. And good morning to you.
Great to be here.
Good to have you both. And we're going to have some other people joining us in the hour. But let me begin, Jose Luis Moscovich, with you. And this is, first of all, we ought to mention just a feasibility study at this point. But the reason for it, I presume, has a great deal to do not only with raising money, but, sustainability, environmental as well as economic.
That's right. This is a way to try to reach a balanced transportation system where everybody has a more reasonable time of it in terms of the reliability of the travel times that people are facing on a daily basis. Not just drivers, but also especially bus riders. You know, people who rely on a mode of transportation and need to get from A to B in a predictable fashion. And that predictability has been the casualty in the last decade or so as congestion has increased.
Well, let's talk about what the study tells us as far as hard data, just so listeners know what we're talking about here. There are estimates of about 60 to 80 million that would be generated a year, 12% traffic reduction. It would speed up transit vehicles 20 to 25%. At least those are the figures I saw.
That's right. And the most important thing to remember about the money, which seems to be the focus that people have, is that it would be reinvested 100% into transportation improvements. So if you absolutely do not want to pay the fee, you can get on a bus that actually gets there on time. You can get on a train that has more service than it has now. And those services, by definition, would have to cover not just San Francisco, but the neighboring counties that generate most of the trip exchanges between San Francisco and other places, you know, where people live and come to work in San Francisco, things like Caltrain, for example. Those would have to be appreciably improved so that people who are currently choosing to drive will make a choice to take public transportation instead.
Can you also tell us about the final report's mentioning of three sections for consideration in terms of tolls? What are they?
There are, and again, I would emphasize that this is just a feasibility study. You know, in order to understand whether this might work in San Francisco and its neighboring counties, we had to pose three scenarios or some scenarios. We settled on three that we thought could be interesting to provide some perspective. One of them is what we call the Northeast Cordon design, that essentially takes a northeast quadrant of the city, bounded on the east, on the west by Laguna Street, and on the south by 18th. So it covers downtown, North Beach, Chinatown, and the south of Market area, essentially, and Mission Bay. And in that area, there are two different scenarios that were looked at. One would have a congestion toll of $3 in the a.m. peak, and same thing in the p.m. peak. So we're talking 6 to 9 a.m., and 3 to 6 p.m. You come in, you pay $3, you leave, you pay another $3, capped at a maximum of six. There's a variation on that, which is a scenario where you only would get charged in the PM peak going out of the congestion area, $6. And then there's a third one, which is called the Southern Gateway, where we would try to take the moves that happen across the county line between San Francisco and San Mateo County and do a similar sort of charge. And all of them have the same idea of reinvesting in the corridors. In the case of the Southern Gateway, for example, the 101 corridor, which has major congestion and is scheduled to have even more congestion, and put the other modes, you know, Samtrans and Caltrain and so on a much better footing than they currently are in terms of competing for trips and getting people to what we call attractive options to the automobile.
As opposed to building more highway space.
There is the reality is that, first of all, we don't have the money, and secondly, we don't have either the room or the, I believe, the political or public consensus to expand freeways in the Bay Area. I think that's pretty much, in a corridor like that, a thing of the past. So what do? We can't double-deck 101. So other options are called for. And if you've been traveling in the Peninsula Corridor lately, you can see that 280 is not in great shape either anymore, which is kind of surprising given the capacity there.
Jose Luis Moscovich again with us in studios, Executive Director of the San Francisco County Transportation Authority, and Rob Black is Vice President of Public Policy for the San Francisco Chamber of Commerce. Rob, what's wrong with this? I even read in the report that it's going to be good for business, supposedly.
Well, we don't necessarily agree with the idea that it's going to be good for business. But we also don't agree that it's necessarily going to be good for the city generally, especially in regards to the tax base. This has been tried in other locations, such as London or Singapore. There are very different geographic situations.
It's been very successful, we should mention, in London and in Stockholm.
Well, I think, again, that's something that could be argued. London, on this December 24th, will get rid of their western portion of their charging because of two-thirds of those folks who live there don't want it. And within 4 years of the congestion fee going into central London, you had rates of cars moving at the same rate they were before. So there are more buses
moving.
There was
a change of 2 to 5 miles per hour, supposedly, in the flow of traffic in London. At least that's what I read.
It did initially, but then it dropped back. Now, they've had to increase the fees, and they're, I believe, in January, will increase the fee again to double what it started with. So the fee will have doubled in the 7 years that it's been implemented. So maybe it will push more cars back. But as those fees escalate, that's a cost on business. It's a cost on residents living and participating in their community. And we're seeing something else that's happening. And Jose Luis is absolutely right. This is just a study that's looking out, and they were not looking to implement anything for maybe 2015. But if I'm a new business and I want to locate in San Francisco, I'm looking at leases that are much longer than that. So this impacts me. We have 12 million square feet of empty office space in San Francisco right now. We have 100,000 less jobs in 2010 than we did in 2000. Even if we got 10,000 more jobs a year, it'd take us 10 years to get back to where we were 10 years ago. So we're very nervous that businesses looking to locate here are looking for long-term leases that this will impact. And we're hearing from them saying this is something that we're considering when we think about where we locate.
Are you also concerned about the fact that businesses may indeed find that it's not to their advantage? Because, as I said, the report seems to indicate that people, in terms of their shopping time, are going to plan things differently, and it will indeed accrue to the businesses, at least, again, according to the analysis that I read.
Well, again, I think you have to look at the geography of San Francisco. We're a 47-square-mile location within a 7,000-square-mile Bay Area. If you move outside of San Francisco to shop, it's easy to do. In central London, it's a 659-square-mile, London is. To move outside of central London, they still get the tax base. They still get those resources. If you move to Daly City to do your shopping, San Francisco doesn't. And San Francisco businesses don't, and our general treasury doesn't. So that's where we think we have very big concerns about the difference in geography and the impact on revenue streams that this has versus other jurisdictions. Singapore is an island. I mean,
What about Stockholm? I mean, in Stockholm, two-thirds of, you mentioned the two-thirds figure in London, two-thirds of people were against it. And then when they reduced traffic by 23% and greenhouse gas emissions by 14%, suddenly it went just to the reversal, flipped to two-thirds in favor of it.
In Stockholm?
Yeah.
Again, Stockholm has a different – you have a different model economically where
– And by the way, there were business benefits also, it turned out, in Stockholm. So.
We have some issues with some of those findings. Obviously,
yeah.
The London Chamber of Commerce has different economic analysis than what has been used as support for this. So I think there's – you know, anytime that you have numbers in there, there's going to be different perspectives on those numbers. But again, you're talking about a geographic area that's small within a much larger geographic area. San Francisco in a – commercial situation and a economic situation is very fundamentally different as a small geographic portion of a large Bay Area, and we are very afraid of economic flight out of that.
Are you concerned about the commuters and having to pay? I mean, this being a kind of tax almost on them, does that concern you as well?
Well, I think one of the concerns is that It will be something that will require a very high threshold to pass, because we believe that this will be under Prop 26 a fee that will have to be voted on and supported by the voters. We're spending a lot of money and time, and the County Transportation Authority does a lot of really amazing work for improving transit in both in San Francisco and the Bay Area. We would like to see them doing something probably else that we don't think will require a two-thirds vote approval. That this is going to require.
I think from your side, Jose Luis, the fact that this needs that kind of approval is the downside of it. I mean, particularly the state approval, isn't it?
We've known all along that, and it's a good thing to clarify, that in order for any of these pricing programs to move forward, there is a need for enabling state legislation. And so our best effort has been, as Rob just indicated, to do the best professional work we can do so that we have the facts, and the facts are not subject to debate, and then we can make a clear case, not just to the legislature, but beforehand. Hand to the other counties that are likely to be participating in this, so that we can go together to the legislature with the benefits of this and get an approval at the very least.
It's a big education job.
Yeah, that's right. But education is something unavoidable at this stage, because we are going to have the congestion at levels that are going to be intolerable. And that's going to happen because, at least I believe, that we are going to come out of the current economic downturn, and we probably are going to get out of that sooner than people realize. And when that happens and we get to the second dot-com boom, maybe the biotech boom or whatever, it will be too late for us to start thinking about this when we are in the middle of it. And so I am actually worried about the effects on businesses of not doing something, of not debating this topic now so that we can get ready. That's what the basis of planning is. You get ready ahead of time and find that consensus, that common denominator that you can all work with, so that we can implement something or at least test something. I would like to say that, by the way, in the London case, London went with an initial pricing zone, which is fairly similar in nature to what we're proposing in the northeast quadrant of the city. And then Mayor Livingston, as one of the last things he did before he left office, tried to expand it. The original zone is not in question. The expansion is what was in question. The original zone has actually given good results. And one of the main things that you find is more people, more pedestrians equates to better shopping conditions and more shopping in downtown. And we find that will be the case here too. When you combine that with the fact that there's the proposals that are on the table or the things that have been discussed and analyzed are geared to 6 to 9 a.m. and 3 to 6 p.m. We're deliberately trying to avoid affecting the shoppers, the people who come into the city for entertainment, you know, the evening visitors and so on. And the other thing is that people make their travel decisions, because those charging times are very circumscribed, you know, to those 3 hours in the morning and 3 hours in the evening, people will have the ability to actually avoid the charging zone. If you can leave at 6:15 or 6:30, then you're only paying the morning charge, not the evening charge, and so on.
You say what to that, Rob Black?
Well, I think we are, again, in a broader sense, we have seen tremendous job loss in San Francisco. And I hope Jose is right and we come back very quickly. That's not what we see. It's going to be a slow, gradual recovery. We don't see – I mean, again, we're 100,000 jobs off from where we were 10 years ago. We see most of the congestion that happens and affects downtown San Francisco is people trying to get on and off of the bridges during those rush hours. It's not necessarily the streets or other than getting on and off the bridge. So can we do something that's better and more targeted to help that congestion? I think yes. But we also, in a broader sense, it is a regional problem. We have a lot of those. The reason we can't get an on and off the bridge is people driving all the way through on the highways. If we can reduce regional traffic by car, it will reduce our congestion on our streets. And so we're very much more in favor of a regional approach that doesn't isolate just San Francisco economically and geographically, but incorporates the broader Bay Area.
I think that it's safe to say that many outside of San Francisco would go along with the regional approach. And we wanted to hear from Jerry Hill, who's an assembly member with the California State Assembly, because there's already some concern, to put it mildly, out of San Mateo and Peninsula against even this moving forward. This is a feasibility study. Let's remind ourselves it's being discussed today by the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, but it is in the works as a real possibility. And there have already been Assemblyman Hill, first of all, thank you for joining us. Good morning.
My pleasure. Good morning.
Already threats of retaliation, tolls coming from San Mateo and Millbrae and maybe everywhere else down the peninsula?
Well, that's what I've heard. Certainly, I don't like the idea, and that's probably one of the things that's wrong with this idea. This is something that, as mentioned just previously, this should be looked at regionally. Traffic congestion on our highways is a regional issue. And it's been solved regionally through the Metropolitan Transportation Commission, as we just saw on Highway 680 over by Contra Costa County in Alameda, where they have the hot lane, or taking an HOV lane and turning it into a toll lane during those congestion hours. So it looks at congestion and congestion pricing from a regional standpoint, because traffic, as mentioned, is regional. It's moving from one county to the next. This is not something that should be done unilaterally by one city, one county, at the expense of other counties and other residents.
And you've said, I believe you're on record as saying, that you would put legislation in motion to block it and prevent this type of toll in the
Absolutely.
Future?
If they move forward today with considering this option, that's I think it's option number three, looking at tolls at the city borders or county borders, I will move forward with legislation to block that from happening.
And you feel at this point that it will also actually set toll wars off?
Well, I think it will. It certainly will, because, you know, there are 20 cities in San Mateo County, and each one has residents that either work in San Francisco, travel through San Francisco. I go to Sacramento a few times a week. So I'll be going through with the same problem, the same situation, in the time that I have to be there to get to Sacramento for the meetings that occur. So we'll see the residents in each city will be affected by this at possibly an expense of $1,500 a year. They're going to react. So the way they will react is anger, and their city councils will initiate their own fees, and then we'll have the tolls going into 20 cities in San Mateo County that I don't think is appropriate. I don't think it's the way to solve the problem, and we don't need that right now.
You're also predicting that businesses will start looking to move outside of the city?
Well, I think businesses, some have done that already, And I think people will look at, you know, we're partners. I mean, this is a regional area. We try to get along with everyone. As you know, I think the 49ers, for one, most of the people who, the fans for 49ers come from the peninsula, shoppers, business people. I travel into San Francisco going through and in the morning, and there are more people coming out of the city than going into the city. So I think this is a regional issue. And if we had a robust, a vibrant public transportation system outside of San Francisco, I mean, San Francisco has a great system with Muni, but we don't have a robust, you know, vibrant public transportation system that serves the region, serves the Bay Area. Caltrain, for one, is an excellent system, but because of the economy, it's cutting back on its service level, sadly, because it's not getting proper funding from its partners. I mean, San Francisco doesn't, you know, that's a bare minimum of funding, but the electrification issues and some of the things that could empower that system to be more effective and encourage more riders, we don't see. The ferry systems that are going to be initiated into South San Francisco very soon, another regional approach that that seems to be working.
So Assemblyman Jerry Hill of the California State Assembly, formerly actually with the San Mateo City Council and a member of the California Air Resources Board before he became part of the State Assembly. And Assemblyman, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
KQED spoke with San Francisco Supervisor Ross Mercurimi yesterday. Actually, we've got him on the phone here. That's good to know. Ross, good to have you. Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, a lot of criticism has come down for San Francisco not investing in their infrastructure and sort of being held up in the sense that this could have all been avoided and should have been avoided.
Well, I think that the cost of not studying the proposition of having a congestion pricing study is even worse. I agree with Assemblymember Hill with regard to us looking at a more regional approach, but first we need to study, I think, what those particular options are before we're able to launch into what I think would be an effective partnership. San Francisco has a history of regional partnerships, especially with San Mateo County, such as the Bi-County Transportation Study, which we conducted collectively, and the 101 Caltrain Study as well. But as I'm sure Assemblymember Hill and others know, Senate Bill 375 requires the nine Bay Area counties to prepare for a significant infusion of population, jobs, congestion that requires all of us over the next 20, 25 years to prepare a sustainable communities plan. And that sustainable communities plan, I do not think, is going to include the expansion or building of more highways or more roads, since arguably we have a hard time throughout the Bay Area maintaining the roads and highways that we have. So we need a strategy that helps us reduce usage of private automobiles while reinvesting into a transit system. Very well could be a regional transit system. We believe that potentially a congestion pricing study would significantly reduce the gridlock by 30% and raise upwards to about $80 million reinvested into roads, reinvested into transit, and perhaps even regional transit. I appreciate the strength of some of the San Mateo County's remarks. However, though, I think it's a little bit of a misfire, premature, because all we're doing is studying this. It's not a threat. If anything, I think it's an opportunity.
Supervisor Ross Mercurimi, and thank you for joining us. Glad to have you on the record here. We're going to go to a break, but when we come back, we'll hear from you, our listeners, and feel free to join us. It's toll-free, 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls. If you'd like to go on record here, or if you have a question or comment, you can join us now. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also send an email to us, forum@kqed.org, or you can post a question or comment on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. San Francisco's Board of Supervisors is voting today whether to continue a study, a controversial study, on congestion pricing for San Francisco. And under congestion pricing, drivers entering downtown and surrounding areas during peak hours would be charged a toll, and the money gathered would go to strengthening public transportation, We're talking with Jose Luis Moscovich, who is Executive Director of San Francisco's County Transportation Authority, and Rob Black, who is Vice President of Public Policy with the San Francisco Chamber of Commerce. Assemblyman Jerry Hill joined us. We heard from him. We also heard from Supervisor Ross Mercurimi, and we're going to hear from you, our listeners, in just a moment here with many emails and calls coming in. We wanted to go first to Rachel Gordon, though, who's City Hall reporter with San Francisco Chronicle, just to kind of get the lay of the land in terms of political side of this. Rachel, welcome. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
Well, the board is divided on this. You got four of the people voting tomorrow who won't be here after January, so we've got a situation that's obviously somewhat in limbo. But how do you see this in terms of the receptiveness overall? We're hearing from people on the peninsula not being happy about this. What's your sense of San Francisco?
Well, in San Francisco, I think there's also going to be mixed reactions. So it's the Board of Supervisors meeting as a county transportation authority, and one of the things they're charged with is trying to reduce congestion. So they're looking at a few issues: reduce congestion, raise revenue. Supervisor Mercurimi mentioned that it could raise up to $60 million a year, $60 to $80 million, with that money being poured into everything from improved muni service to potentially improved BART service, SamTrans, Caltrain, and even road repaving projects, also bike and pedestrian improvements. That's a big driving factor behind this. As even Assemblyman Hills mentioned, that there's a shortage of funding for transportation. We've seen big hits coming from the state, so this is one way that they can get the money there. Congestion reduction is one thing. You can do kind of pocketbook policy. If you hit people in their pocketbook saying, okay, you're going to have to pay more if you drive during these certain hours, they might change their driving behavior, reduce congestion that way. And also, Bay Area is under intense pressure to try to reduce pollution from cars, from automobiles, which makes up a big chunk of why we have air pollution in the Bay Area. So those are kind of the things that are simmering there. But you have to look at what this might be just to the individual. If you have to, say you don't go on vacation, you do drive 52 weeks a year to get to school or get to work, maybe drop your kids off at a school, that's $1,560 a year potentially that you could be having to pay. Not a good political climate to do that in. So, yes, what might the Board of Supervisors do? My guess is that they're going to go ahead and say, let's do more study, but really be very careful saying this is not a project we're endorsing at this time. Economically, it's a really hard time to go forward with it.
What about down the line? I mean, there's a lengthy environmental review process anyway. We were not talking about feasibility likely until, well, going into effect 2015. Yeah.
Right. I mean, feasibility, I think it's going to be a whole different political climate there. We don't know who the mayor of San Francisco will be. We are going to have a different Board of Supervisors. We're going to have intense pressures probably coming from state lawmakers. I'd be surprised if you could get a strong buy-in from the communities where the commuters are coming into San Francisco. Why would you say, yes, we want to charge you an extra $1,500 a year or $1,000 a year? As Jose Luis Moscovich said, though, the big challenge is going to be public education. How do you get buy-in? When the Transportation Authority did some surveys on it, my understanding is the first blush when you said, would you be willing to pay a car charge, a toll, people pretty much said, no, we don't want to do it. When they start doing more in-depth questioning, saying, well, how about if you knew you could get through the streets of San Francisco quicker because of reduced congestion? How about if you knew that some of the money that would be raised would be going to these certain projects for transportation improvements? Then the buy-in got a little bit better. But if you have to go to the state legislature again, that's going to be a big uphill battle. And also, if you do have to go to the vote of the people under Prop 26, and I think that question is still being debated, whether congestion toll pricing is going to kick into the Prop 26 mandate, which is a very high threshold to overcome. And would it be just for San Francisco, or would it have to be regionally as well for the drivers who are going to be affected coming from other counties?
Rachel Gordon covers City Hall for the San Francisco Chronicle, and we thank you, Rachel, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We should mention, by the way, the taxis and emergency vehicles under this feasibility report would be accepted, and there would be discounts for low-income people. There's a lot of detail here. In fact, Jose, can they get the report? Can people see it online?
Oh, absolutely. Go to our website, www.sfcta.org, and look for the mobility access and pricing study.
For those of you interested, I would strongly urge it. We also ought to mention, just as a footnote, that the Fed actually offered to put in about $310 million to have this launched in New York. It would have been the first congestion tolling program in the country, and it died. And I'm not sure why it died. Maybe, Jose, you can clarify.
Well, it was a case of political antibodies between Albany and New York City, and I don't think that there's much more that can be said about that. In New York, interestingly, both the almost the entire city council and business interests were in favor of it and very much behind Mayor Bloomberg's initiative on it. This was essentially something
that— have your own antibodies in Sacramento to deal with.
Well, you know, but I think that the key to it, Michael, is that we need to understand that if we are considering a toll across a county line, it's because we know that there are people traveling from one county to the other and back, and there are people traveling from, in this case, this county to outside for work and so on. Modern life is much more complex than how things were set up in the 1900s, you know. And we're talking about an electronic toll that has to be collected for whatever vehicle crosses a line. And the key is not that. The key is not the technology. We're not going to have a moat or a toll booth anywhere. That's the vision of the 1920s. What we're going to do is have an expenditure plan that lays out how the money is going to be used. And obviously, if what we're trying to do is give options to people traveling between San Mateo and San Francisco, we have to improve things like Caltrain, you know, as Assemblyman Hill referred to. So by definition, the use of the money is subregional already. It has to be, you know, Samtrans, Caltrain, in addition to Muni, so that people have real options. And I think what Assemblyman Hill said is correct, that people have difficulties on the transit service side at the San Mateo end. You know, if you stay at work late and you get back, maybe there's reduced Caltrain service, there's not enough feeder service to the Caltrain stations from Samtrans, so it's a hardship for folks in San Mateo. Well, that's the idea precisely with this money, is to try to create a situation where those options are more real and people can use them.
Not only the peninsula. I'm looking at emails here. For example, here's James from Marin, who says, if the city is going to impose congestion fees for drivers, and they should also provide less expensive parking at the periphery of the fee area, and adequate public transit options from that parking. Commuting from Marin and Sonoma is really tough, especially the further north one lives. Marin should have opted to build BART along with the East Bay. I feel we should rip out the center lanes of 101 through Marin and run trains along that
corridor. There you go.
There you go. Okay.
I wouldn't disagree with that either.
And another listener writes, congratulations to San Francisco for taking up the issue of congestion pricing to improve transit and our health and travel freedom. Isn't the problem that the government funds congestion management through the congestion management areas instead of congestion measurement that could lead to solutions? Well, let me go to some callers here before I go to any more emails. And Ray, let's go to you first. Good morning.
Hello, good morning. I'm a small business, and I'm a designer. I have to run around all over town. I barely make a living working here in San Francisco. And somehow it just seems that, you know, all the fees keep going up, and it just keeps on penalizing people that barely are able to afford living in the city, whereas people, there's so much money here, and so many even of my own clients who really wouldn't care about that because it's much easier for them to pay. It would make it easier for them to be downtown with less people because to them, money's really no object. It just seems that it makes working class people be almost not really welcome in the city unless you have a lot of money.
That seems to be, Rob Black, the sentiment that many are giving you, I guess, aren't they?
Certainly. Our members from in the Chamber of Commerce, that has been overwhelming their message to us, that San Francisco already is an expensive place. It is a challenging place to do business, but it's a great place to do business as well. But there's a lot of concern that this is just one more significant expense that drives both customers and businesses away.
Let me read some more emails. Dan says, the fee is a tax on those who don't live in San Francisco to allow San Francisco politicians to continue to overpay San Francisco municipal employees, a third of whom make over $100,000 a year. Eugene writes, I work in Mountain View and live in San Francisco. Taking Caltrain is still more expensive than driving my hybrid car. If toll on 101 and 280 will help lower Caltrain price, I'm for it 100%. This is kind of the range, at least, of what we're getting. Let's get some more calls in here. And Jesse is joining us from Oakland. Jesse, good morning.
Hi. I live in the East Bay and commute into San Francisco. I'm low income, and I live in the East Bay to reduce my cost of living. I'm a working artist in San Francisco, and I think that this would negatively affect me. I mostly take BART, but occasionally I need to drive. And I'm curious about what would qualify as being a low-income resident. of the East Bay going into San Francisco, and also the mechanism of how this money would be exchanged, and also what the sort of term of, like, the product being that the transportation system would be improved for residents around the Bay Area to be able to get where it is they need to go and not pay the fee.
Well, we've already talked about the mechanism, as you put it, but Jose, where would lower income people be? What kind of category would they put in here to have lower fees? How would that work?
Well, that's one of the things that we need to analyze as part of the next steps here. That you can take a federal poverty line, but that doesn't necessarily make sense in an area as expensive to live as San Francisco. But I think more fundamentally, for somebody who occasionally drives, there's always the option of planning the trip a little bit ahead so that you miss those windows when the charge is being applied. You come in midday. You come in a little bit after the morning toll goes off, or before it applies in the afternoon. And more importantly, San Francisco is committed to transit. It has a very good transit system. It has the largest collection of transit services in anywhere west of Chicago. If we had to build the transit service we have in downtown San Francisco today, we'd probably spend $30 billion, between BART and Metro and so on. The poor, the working class, are already on the bus. They are the ones who will benefit from having a faster-flowing transportation system. They are the ones who will get more reliable service, who will get shorter trips. We're not worried that they will be negatively impacted. The residents in the zone will be exempted. And of course, these are all the things that we posited in the feasibility study. They can all be changed. They can be tailored, to the situation. But for example, you assume that the maximum amount that people will pay per day is $6. You can come in and out of the zone as many times as you want. When you reach the $6, that's it. So what I'm trying to say with this is that technology is there already, has been already available for the past decade or so, to allow us to modify the program to deal with all of these special classes of people that need to be protected against any kind of regressivity of the idea, so that they can continue to make a living in San Francisco. They can continue to come into the city, but we can tailor the system for more fairness, rather than to say, well, it cannot be done because case A or B cannot be accommodated.
I want to actually get Rob Black's response to that, as well as to some emails here. But Jose, haven't you said that a lot of the downtown congestion problem is actually because many of the downtown businesses give free parking?
The statistic is that of the people, and we're talking commuters now, not right, shoppers, of the people that come to San Francisco that drive every day into downtown to work 5 days a week, more than half of them get their parking for free from their employers.
And Rob, here's a listener who says, the Chamber of Commerce representative proves the Chamber is a conservative, fearful organization, keeping the city reined in and unable to solve its own problems. He doesn't provide any documented proof of his arguments against. Regardless of the arguments back and forth, this plan is worth a try. Why can't we rise above the other lagging metropolises and approach the challenge scientifically? And another listener, sort of in tandem with this, mm-hmm, says, what is the study project for lost sales in San Francisco? Maybe you can give us some figures of what you at least know about that, because this listener, Steven, says, I travel to the city for holiday shopping, for example, so mass transit isn't an option. This policy will make other retail areas more attractive.
Well, and that's our fear, is that you have studies within the Transportation Authority's study, and they look at average spends per visit, and an average spend per visit for a car is significantly higher than someone who's taking transit or walking. And that's certainly a concern of ours. But to my position as fearmonger, I again go back to the idea that we need to be looking at a better approach, not no approach. We should be looking at regional issues, and we believe that parking, and that was just raised, is a significant part of the problem. You have people who drive from the East Bay to the South Bay to park for free all day in an office park. That cost, it puts people on the roads. Those are the people who keep our people coming in and off out of San Francisco from getting on the highways. If those parking spaces around the Bay Area were not free, that would generate significant revenue. And we believe it would be in a more equitable sense and also a better policy approach if we could get the Bay Area to agree that parking in these types of, you know, commuting-type parking should not be free anywhere in the Bay Area.
And let me bring more of our callers in. Thank you for waiting. Eric, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
So I've got a question and a comment. The question that I'd like to hear the answer to is that, you know, I think a lot of these goals are laudable, such as reducing congestion and traffic and gasoline utilization and pollution. What other ideas are being considered? Or is this sort of a one-idea, you know, railroading? And that, so that's the question. And then I also have a comment about just how this looks from outside of San Francisco. It's sort of another one of these San Francisco thinking that it's kind of like Paris and it's the only city in the region and it's pretty much the only city in the country, and forgetting that it's a part of a region and just going its own way and ignoring the region around it. And maybe that made sense in the Gold Rush days, but other than U.S. government centers, San Francisco isn't really the center of gravity of the Bay Area for much anymore. There's not really a center of gravity for the Bay Area.
Not only perhaps not being San Francisco-centric like you're suggesting, but I'm looking at an email here, actually a web comment from one of our listeners named Colin, who says, a scheme like this might work in London or Stockholm, where I'm assuming they have decent public transportation alternatives. The public transportation around San Francisco is a complete joke. I mean, there is that attitude, I'm afraid. But, Jose, let me get back to the initial question that the caller raised. Initial question having to do with what other alternatives have been look for here.
I assume that the caller is referring to alternatives to deal with the mandates in SB 375, which is the climate action imperative that we're under because of state legislation. I mean, we have to reduce.
Was that what you were thinking of, Eric? Or?
I wasn't thinking of that in specific, but that's a reasonable place to start.
Well, I mean, the region has a mandate to do something about that, and both all of the regional agencies are working on that in concert with all of the counties, not just San Francisco. And we're talking about taking another serious look at the location of jobs vis-a-vis housing and asking San Francisco, for example, to absorb a much larger share of the housing growth in the region than it has in the past, because San Francisco, with its more dense and compact development, could then generate a lot of pedestrian trips and transit trips that are not viable in some of the other places. I think that the caller needs to remember that San Francisco has been welcoming hundreds of thousands of commuters into work every day in downtown for the past century, and there's no mechanism for the region to compensate the city for all of the public services that it has to provide, you know, the street cleaning and the lighting and the transportation and so on. That happens just because of the way the economy of the region is structured. So this is by no means a San Francisco-centered way of looking at this. We are not...
So what we're hearing, of course, from many people, especially down the peninsula, that it's selfish and so forth.
I think we need to spend more time talking about this with each other, because the counties in the peninsula and the counties around the Bay Area have the same responsibility we have to figure out a way to deal with the climate change imperative, and more, I think, more immediately to deal with the very likely scenario where congestion will increase because of growth. There will be growth. I think that all we're doing here is reflecting the growth projections, the current growth projections that the region is making, ABAG and MTC, that look well beyond the current recession curve and into the future. And it's actually a pretty bright future if you get past the next 5 years. And in that time frame, we need to start finding solutions.
Yeah, I mentioned in my introduction there are 4 million trips now. That will be up to 5 million by 2030. You were going to say, Rob Black?
Yes, Michael. One, just to the speaker's last comment, are there other solutions that people are looking at. There are some things, especially around parking, that the city is trying to look at. We have a federal grant that's helping fund a program called SF Park, which is looking at parking management within the city. It's estimated up to 20 to 30% of congestion is actually people circulating looking for parking. If we can help them more efficiently move into parking locations by signage, we will soon have apps that you can look on your smartphone, not that you would while you're driving, but where there's parking available both on the street and in parking lots, that's going to take a lot of people off of the streets. It's those sort of things, again, we think are a smarter approach that are more resident and business-friendly than kind of a cordon around the city.
And I'm going to go to more of your – I'm sorry, Jose. You
Michael,
say
I think that it's important to clarify the role of parking. We believe that parking regulation is important too. But just to give you a sense of how limited the impact of parking pricing would necessarily be, you just mentioned a figure of several million trips a day. Well, there are 24,000 parking meters in San Francisco. So even if you regulated every single one of them with a variable pricing scheme or something like that, it's 24,000 meters. You can't really make enough of an impact on several million trips a day out of 24,000 meters. Then you have the parking structures that are owned by the city. But again, they add up to a few thousand spaces. So by definition, you have a different order of magnitude in terms of what you can appreciably affect through parking. Parking is part of the equation, but posing a solution that is only based on parking will necessarily give you marginal results. The other thing I wanted to mention just to
say... Can you explain to me with all those parking meters why it is whenever mine runs out, I get a ticket?
That's because you have been waiting for what the MTA is doing now, which is to give you ability to pay your parking meter with different payment methods, and hopefully in the near future to be able to pay it remotely so that you can avoid that.
Otherwise,
parking
you carry
meter.
Enough quarters, you can be bogged down like, well, it's
That's
almost
right.
like being a plumber or something.
Right.
Let me get to some more of our callers here. We'll go next to you, Roberta. Thank you for waiting. You're on.
Thank you. Hey, I have a couple of comments, the first of which is that I'm in the adult beverage industry, and that means that I have to work with all of our wonderful cafes, restaurants, bars, mom-and-pop stores here in San Francisco. And I have to travel from one side of the city to the other because they don't all just see me on one particular day. And I would hope that for other people, not just for myself, but other people who are like me, who actually have to have, samples and pamphlets and things of that nature that we carry with us. And I look crazy on BART or something, but that I would be, people like me would be applied to this equation in some manner whereby we get some kind of a, commercial business pass or something of that nature, which I'd be willing to say is a good idea. The other part is this, is that I've always thought, because I lived here for 30 years before I moved to the East Bay to buy a little tiny cottage to live here and continue working here. And I believed for years, Michael, that San Francisco should do this. They should paint all the yellow curbs gray. They should put working meters in all those yellow zones as well, because we all know that if there's a yellow zone, it's not parked in. There's double parking that goes on. And I think that could also generate revenue and possibly a few more spaces available. Not that you necessarily want that.
All right, Roberta, I thank you for your comments. Appreciate hearing from you. I want to get another caller in here, and that's Joachim from Pacifica. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
Yes, sir. You're on the air.
What I wanted to say, I've lived in London for 10 years, and I was there when the congestion charge was first introduced. And you can live in Sevenoaks, which is miles and miles and miles outside of London, and still get into town in under an hour. The public transport system in Stockholm as well is brilliant. And there's nothing like that here in the Bay Area. The other thing is that, if I'm not totally mistaken, the bridges already cost money. So if you have a congestion charge for San Francisco that goes on top of whatever people have to pay to come in to town through the bridges, so it would be over, I think, I don't know what the congestion charge proposal was, I think $6, was it $6?
$3 each way.
There you go then. You pay, if you come from Marin, you pay $12.
That's right.
No, not $12, $3 each way, maximum of $6 a day.
Yeah, but he's saying you're talking about $12.
Oh, because of the toll. Yes,
oh, yeah.
The idea would be to actually rebate the congestion charge for people who are already paying bridge tolls by a dollar. Also, just to acknowledge that they are making a contribution toward the solution.
And what about business people, like the last caller?
I think that's perfectly reasonable expectation that people who need their vehicle for transporting tools or samples, like in the case of this caller, and so on. There are ways in which a system can be molded to deal with that. Not to speak of the fact that even if you approached it the way it is, sort of as a standard toll, there's a maximum $6 charge. You know, so you can come in and out of the zone as many times as you like. So that could be dealt with either as a reduction or as an exemption. Or with a business license, as she actually suggested.
We've got seconds left here. Other than suggesting a regional approach, Rob Black, what else can be done? I mean, about congestion. Any other ideas percolating with you?
Well, I think around congestion, again, our biggest concern at this point is quite honestly the 12 million square feet of empty office space and 100,000 less jobs than we'd had 10 years ago. In some ways, and I don't mean to be too flip, we'd like to see a little more congestion. We'd like to see more people coming to the city and working and shopping. With that said, they need to be able to do it efficiently and as environmentally neutral or positive as possible. So again, we think that we need to be focusing on revenue streams. Understood. We have to figure out how to pay for a more robust public transit system. We think there are better regional ways to do that.
Well, there are also ways that you can continue this conversation. Simply go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, and the conversation will indeed continue. I want to thank Rob Black from the San Francisco Chamber of Commerce and Jose Luis Muscovich from the San Francisco County Transportation Authority. Also, thanks to Jerry Hill, Assemblyman, who was with us earlier, Rachel Gordon from the Chronicle, and Ross Mercurimi from the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. Thanks to you, our listeners. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our producers are Kevin Guillory and Judy Campbell. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.